Hip politics, baby.
And counting us down in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, everybody. We are here for another episode of the Hip Politics Podcast. Welcome back to all our Hip Politics podcast family out on the interwebs. Your host here, Cameron Trimble, Cameron Calvin Trimble, a.k.a. Mr. Cameron Calvin, a.k.a. Mr. Hip Politics, a.k.a. Mr. 216 to the 202. I'm here and I am joined by my illustrious co-host and co-pilot, Mr. Michael McQuarrie, a.k.a. the mayor of Capitol Hill, a.k.a. Mr. DC Nuke 90. We are currently sheltered in place safely. Yes. safely in place. But this don't, quarantine and corona not stopping this show. There's actually, if anything, there's more need, and there's a need for even more information, the right information. These stories, like, this is still one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime. If anything, this COVID-19 crisis has only exacerbated that and, like, pointed spotlight on how important, like, government response really is. People, I think, 45 and a lot of his ilk has tried to reduce the government imprint, tried to slander that name, and rightfully so, even though our government has done a lot of, almost every group in this country wrong at some point, it is still needed, and is a government, being in a democracy, this is our government, this is a government by the people, for the people. And if anything, the response in this crisis is showing that how important competent, quality, caring government is. In that vein, our guest today is looking to become one of those at the highest national level, and not just state in his home state of Kentucky, but at the national level. He's a transformative leader and looking to currently a candidate for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. We have Mr. Charles Booker. Charles, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? Let me just go back before you jump in. Charles, as people may know or don't know, in Kentucky, he is the youngest state legislature of color, the youngest black state legislator. He currently is a member of the Kentucky House of Representatives in the 43rd District, and he is a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate in 2020 for Kentucky. So welcome to the show, Charles.
Thank you, brother. It's good to be with y'all.
Hey, it's good to have you, my friend. Also, he's a member of Kappa Alpha Psi.
Absolutely. I got the pen on. You can't see it.
Man. I got the hat on.
All day.
That definitely helps. That definitely helps. Well, Charles, how are you doing today? How's the out in Kentucky? All things considered, your family and those loved ones, how are people holding up so far?
Well, this is a tough time for sure, man. A lot of folks are making life adjustments. A lot of folks are losing their jobs, trying to figure out how they're going to keep food on the table. It's a scary time. And considering all that, you know, I'm encouraged. I'm feeling good. You know, I got two little girls, a sixth grader and a preschooler. And so we're teaching them at home, trying to keep the curriculum going. And I just want to commend all of the teachers for your service.
Yeah.
There is no way I could do this work consistently. But we're feeling good. You know, we're taking precautions, working with the governor and the legislature, trying to continue to get relief out to families. And we're locking arms to get through this time together.
Yeah, this is again, as I said in the intro, this is a time where people who all say the government is not really, it doesn't work for us, or isn't needed, let's shrink the government. It's like, and now everybody realized what a competent, caring and compassionate government that we do need in place, when literally lives are on the line, people's livelihoods are on the line. Even if you don't get sick or catch COVID-19 or catch the coronavirus or develop the COVID-19 illness, everyone's life is impacted. Economic impact, there's so many different things that are happening now. Plus 20 plus million people are supposedly now have recently lost their jobs, and that number is only going to increase. Like, a competent and compassionate government response is more needed than ever. And hopefully in this election year, that is something that does come through. But with that, again, like I mentioned, you are the youngest African-American in the state of Kentucky, which I'm not gonna front. Like, I got some family in Kentucky, and I spend time in Kentucky. Bowling Green, Kentucky, Kentucky, and then Lexington. It's Kentucky, I will say, is not the first place that if you think, where are all the black people at? It's not Kentucky. So it's super encouraging to see a brother at the highest level of government in the state and going to the nation, like, just to even have a viable race and a viable candidacy is just really, I think, encouraging to so many people, not just in the state, but throughout the country. So I commend you for having the courage and the boldness to even put yourself out there. But that kind of leads into my first question is, like, how did you coming from your background, how did you decide to get into and devote yourself to a life of politics?
Yeah, so I stumbled into it. You know, to be honest with you, so I'm from the west end of Louisville. Louisville is one of the most segregated cities in the country still. And in the west end, you will find the poorest zip code in the state. So it's not Appalachia, it's not in the mountains, rural part of Kentucky where a lot of people think it is. It's actually where I live right now to this day. And it really was a matter of survival for me. You know, both my parents dropped out of high school. My dad dropped out to go to the Army. My mom dropped out to be mom number two because my family is huge. So my grandparents had 11 kids biologically. And then they opened their house to foster care for my entire life. And adopted the last seven when they got too far up in age. And so my mom was like mom number two, you know, so we never had a lot. They're both ministers, so I knew that we weren't inadequate as human beings, as people, but we struggled a lot, you know, and it always frustrated me because I knew we weren't deficient. I knew we weren't, you know, lazy or morally inept, all the stuff that you might hear that someone like Mitch McConnell would want to convey. And I think what really set it off for me is seeing my mom go without eating so I could eat. I'm a type 1 diabetic, you know, and having to ration my insulin because we couldn't afford it. Just seeing all those types of traumas. And I've had four cousins murdered the past 4 years consecutive. And though the weight of all of these challenges, structural challenges, made me feel a conviction to do something about it. And so I worked my way into every level of government, met the mayor of D.C., and my brother, and really just fought to get into the spaces where decisions, policy and budgetary decisions are made. And so I'm honored to be in the state legislature because there's not a lot of people that look like me there. And not a lot of folks from marginalized, underserved communities that are there, which is the majority of Kentuckians. And that's my charge is to change that and break those barriers down so that poverty isn't generational anymore.
That's what's up. So Charles, now Kentucky is mostly sort of like a rural state, and you know, you're kind of from Louisville, which is kind of urban. How do you plan on kind of mixing, I mean, putting those two together with your campaign and what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I think that's really the power of this moment. You know, we're going to beat Mitch McConnell. First, I got to make that clear. This is not for moral victories. We're not here to just raise issues. We're going to beat Mitch McConnell. But bigger than that is the work that you actually speak to in terms of we have these structural barriers, these silos that keep a lot of communities divided. You know, and that's really why I went to Frankfort to work in the state legislature. I was a legislative analyst there, and I became a director of Fish and Wildlife. So I went all over Kentucky and, of course, as a state legislator. And the thing that I've known to be true, it is yet to be disproven, is when you sit down with folks, no matter where you're from, when you start to talk to them,
right,
you tell your story, you always see how much you have in common. And all it's going to take is the people realizing that, wait a minute, we shouldn't be fighting one another. There's a real barrier that's blocking our progress. And in this race, it's Mitch McConnell. And so I just go all over Kentucky telling my story. You know, no matter where you're from, you know what it's like to see jobs leave, struggle to keep the lights on, hard just to struggle. There's a lot of folks dealing with health challenges. So when I talk about being a diabetic and nearly dying from that, right, people get what that's about, you know. And what I tell everybody is, no matter what color you are, Mitch McConnell's screwing you.
Right.
And I think this is a moment where so many folks have their back against the wall. that they're ready to do something different, even if that meant taking a chance on Donald Trump, which I've like been really digging into, like how that happened and why. And a community like mine where we get ignored, no one talks about us.
Right.
All across Kentucky feel that. And had leaders that said, wait a minute, now I give a damn about you. Let me sit down and talk about your challenges. The system is broken. I'm going to call it out. I'm not going to play politics. That folks will, they'll respect and they'll gravitate to it because we need it. And that's what this campaign is all about.
Gotcha. Very good. Very good. So tell me something. What was your experience on the Hill? What did you do? And how does that transform you to your campaign now?
Wait, before you go there, make sure you explain that. So you used to be a staff. Were you a staffer or intern on the Hill?
Capital. I interned during law school. So that was like in 2008, right up until I graduated in 2010. So I would make the trip up to D.C. every break. And I was interning for Congressman Gregory Meeks out of New York. Came up there during the height of financial reg reform, immigration reform, and of course, you know, ACA. And that was life-changing for me. One, I got to meet a lot of folks that helped to show me what the path forward could look like. Because, you know, I'm from the hood. You know, none of my family is involved in politics, you know, and a lot of folks where I'm from don't trust it because we just trying to survive. They all corrupt. They don't care about us anyway. And I really wanted to get into these spaces and to come to the Hill and to see deliberations on issues that would transform millions of lives and to see people working through the night, trying to do better for folks. Like, it really made me see what's possible. I actually had a conversation while I was interning with someone you remember, Mike, and they were telling me then that, like, well, Charles, I could see you run for office one day.
Uh-huh.
My response was, I hear you, but it's hard for me to believe that because I've never seen it. And, you know, the response was sometimes you got to be what you need to see. And to be in this moment, walking in those steps, knowing that, man, I come from a legacy in Kentucky where I've had family enslaved in Kentucky. I've had relatives lynched in Kentucky. My granddad fought for desegregation. You know, like my cousins that were murdered. Like, I'm carrying a lot of that. And to be able to come to the Hill and see what's possible lets me know we're going to go back there and do some good for Kentucky, man.
Right. So tell me, so what are some of the priorities in your race? What are you trying to bring to the forefront? What do you want people to know?
Yeah, so this race is about the people of Kentucky. Like I said, we're going to get rid of Mitch, but this is about us. And the big thing for me, the driving force behind all the policies that I believe in is generational poverty.
Right.
So many of the challenges we got to grapple with go back to the fact that we are all struggling and our opportunities and resources are limited. So a couple of the big issues that I lean into to sort of make that point are Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, universal basic income, and breaking down barriers to the ballot box. And I talk about those pillars in particular because so much of the power where it's concentrated or the decisions that are made emanate from the fact that we don't have money in our pocket. We're being exploited. We can't stay healthy. So we cannot pursue business opportunities. We cannot do all the things that we'd like to do to pursue our dreams. And so I'm loving the fact that we're able to stand on these issues right now. I'm grateful for it because the pandemic's making it clear that this isn't radical. Like, this is stuff we should have been doing. And Kentuckians are getting behind it from all parts of the political spectrum.
Good.
Question I had, Charles, like something you mentioned when you said like you had never seen that. Like, there's a song by Jay-Z called So Ambitious featuring Pharrell's on Blueprint 3 that is one of my favorite Jay-Z songs. It's like, it's an inspirational song I listen to most days. And he has a line in there that I attached to and I immediately heard when you said it, it's like, I'm different. I can't base what I'm gonna be off of what everybody isn't. And I realized that, like, you had never seen that, but you've lived that and said, like, I can't base what this state needs and what my people need based off what other people have not seen. Clearly, it hasn't worked, so it doesn't exist and it hasn't existed, and you haven't based that. But you are facing an uphill challenge, so I'm curious, not being intricately up to date on like the internal politics and the politics of the race. Can you just tell us about like, and now that we're all sheltered in place and these primaries, so many different things have up in, are kind of up in the air. Can you just give us some updates on like, when is the race? Is it, has it moved to being, do you know if the race has been moved to being fully like vote by mail? Or what are some of the, in this current time and period, what is the race going to look like?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, first of all, the election date was moved back to June 23rd. I was advocating for in the legislature. I think that was the right response to give, make sure we have provisions in place so folks aren't jeopardizing their lives to vote. Our history is too full of that. We don't have to do that. But then also, no excuse absentee ballot, something that we're working on as well, that's going to be a big help. The Democratic caucus is strongly in support, and the governor is in support of as well, mail-in voting. The Secretary of State is pushing back, so we're sort of going through that right now. And it looks like there's going to be a way to hopefully have it in place for the general election. And so, you know, we're still monitoring all of that. And this election, this is historic in levels, because not only will we be beating the most powerful Republican in the country, because Donald Trump ain't a Republican, but we're also challenging the status quo in the primary as well. There's a lot of money in our primary, very similar to the McConnell playbook in general. A lot of money flooded in behind a chosen candidate, and they're flooding the media market person. Disconnected from the ground, not connected to Kentuckians, and we're calling all of that BS out, you know. And so the primary, I think it has about 7 or 8 folks in it, which is also a good thing for me, because I feel like for democracy, we need damn near 4.4 million people in Kentucky need to be running against this guy. It's that bad. So, we're running through this primary now and really making it clear that our campaign is about building a movement, transforming our future, which of course means we got to get rid of Mitch McConnell. And so, you know, we're at that place now where we're getting the chance to build. We have more time. We're able to build out infrastructure to empower or elevate the voices of Kentuckians from their home. So we're doing a lot of volunteer-based organizing, which is super dope. Definitely going to be writing about this when we're done.
So you're in a primary with a candidate who's been backed by the DSCC.
Which is the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, for people who don't know.
Can you tell us why you're the better option against Mitch McConnell and why Democrats should pick you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the first thing for me is I don't play politics. You know, I'm not here to be poll tested. I can't be bought. That's not how we were taught. That's not how we were built. And I live the struggle that a lot of politicians talk about, and Mitch McConnell doesn't even acknowledge exists, you know. And so when I show up, people know that I'm fighting from the heart and I'm fighting for them, and I'm not playing the same political games and screwing us for generations. And just a point that just blows me away is Mitch McConnell was elected 2 weeks after I was born.
Wow.
So the man's been in office my entire life and has really built a model off of screwing Kentuckians, you know. And as an elected official, the only elected in this race, I had to work with our own mini Trump. You know, Matt Bevin was a mini Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I was still able to get legislation passed to help folks with high prescription costs, being able to afford and get access to their medication. So we need coalition members and we need folks on the front line. And that's where I've been. People know it. And that's exactly why we're going to win.
Got you. Cameron, you have a question?
Sorry. My bad. Charles, man, the more I got to research your story and your struggle, I mean, not your story, your journey and your challenges and your accomplishments, like I said, ultra inspiring for a brother like you, a couple years younger than me. And it's like, man, this brother's already doing it like this. So I feel like you can definitely, people can see themselves in you. And I think that's important. Even if they're not in Kentucky, they can look at you and hear you. And say like, oh, that's somebody that grew up like me, or that's somebody who I can represent, connect with. Have you how have you, I guess, engaged that next generation, like right underneath you, whether it be the volunteers that are out there, the next political groups or social justice or people who are activists, and not just Black kids, but I do want to say people a little younger than you, because I think that millennials and Gen Z, you're strongly, we're all, me and you are both millennials. I'm technically the oldest millennial, but you pulling up the millennial and the Gen Z as we kind of go into this next, into these next several years, like, how have you been connected to those groups in that generation?
Yeah, that's we can't call it the X factor anymore, because we need to lead with this, but engaging our young leaders and not just equipping them, but letting them drive and have a say and be accounted for is really the basis of all the work that I've been doing. And I was working in an organization called Cities United, which is focused on working with mayors around the country to reduce gun violence. And the central piece to that is making sure that the folks that are most affected, which are our young folks, are driving the solutions, are leading the conversations, and not just being consulted when we decide it. And I think by leading into that model and still dealing with a lot of the struggles that many young folks face, like I still got student loans. I don't think I ever paid them off. At this point, I call it criminal. And, trying to keep the lights on, trying to, take care of my little ones. I've created a space for more folks to feel like their voices matter. And, to have the support of folks like the Sunrise Movement was a really big sign of proof that we're doing this the right way. That's a student-led group, young folks across the country that are fighting for climate change, and Kentuckians for the Commonwealth is a big organization here in Kentucky that has endorsed me as well. These are all regular folks. A lot of folks that have never been involved in politics before but want change, and we're putting them at the forefront. In our volunteer structure, we're letting folks become ambassadors and captains and manage aspects of the campaign themselves. So they're getting not only training, but they're getting tools so that they can then take that back to their community, whether they're running for office themselves or not. And so that's the big work that we're about. And we don't have to just be in the room. We can take over. That's what we do.
That's fun. So how do people get to, to your campaign, maybe volunteer? Where can we get that information at?
Yeah. So Booker for Kentucky, spelled all the way out. So BookerForKentucky.com. You can go there to see about everything we're doing now. The incredible part about how we're building all this out is we're putting tutorials, training modules, and everything online. So if you want to become an organizer from your home, you want to set up call time, be a phone bank manager from wherever you are, family, we can give you all the tools to do it. And it's really intuitive. We got a lot of staff. Our team is very organizers based. We are a group of hustlers. Like, we all work hard. We're all on the ground. We're all in the street. And so we've been able to use these like very grassroots guerrilla style techniques to give folks tools wherever they're at. So BookerForKentucky.com. Go there. Let's lock arms to get this done.
So I have a quick question. So with this pandemic and this virus.
You got my question, Mike. That's what I was about to ask.
Okay. Yeah. How have you had to change up your campaign? And what is it? Is this the new normal? How have you had to change your techniques and what you have to do to get your word out, your message out?
Yeah. So in one way, I'd say that we haven't had to change it. But one aspect that has really been a big difference is, movements require people. Like, we, showing up and coming together, the visual and the physical connection to folks, you cannot replace that. And, like I said, I come from a family of preachers. My granddad was a storyteller. Like, connecting with folks and being able to sit down with them means so much to me. But it's given us a chance to lean into the other aspects that we should have been doing as a party. We should be doing as people in general, which is meet people where they at, equip folks wherever they're at. Because, some people don't have access to transportation, so they can't come to your campaign office. They're doing a lot of struggles. They don't know how to get involved. So we've really been leaning into the tools of, all right, you got some friends in your circle. Here's how you can talk to them about issues. here's how you can even engage them to become ambassadors too on stuff you care about. And so I'm really excited about that. And I think that the new norm that comes out of it is more people will be more creative and intentional about how we communicate and listen to one another. That's my hope.
Gotcha.
I think to that point, we've on the platform, we've also had these culture convos, like with digital happy hours over since we've been quarantined, and getting different political insiders, elected officials together around like topics around the hip hop political space. And we just had one just literally on like the digital double down, like people that double down on the in the digital space now that we're all locked in place. Because to your point, your movements, and it requires people. It requires not just people hopefully voting, but you've got to get people involved. And now that you've taken out door knocks and physical gatherings, like, it's good to see that you're adjusting, and then different parties and candidates and campaigns are adjusting to meet people. Well, this has been, I've learned a lot. And this has been a very cool, just an exchange. Like I said, it's super inspirational just for me personally. And I know probably for so many of our viewers and listeners, just to know that there's somebody like this is possible. Like, you're not running for, I mean, you're already in the House of Representatives for your state, which is a huge freaking deal to begin with. But to be running for U.S. Senate, we just had Jamie Harrison, who's another Black Democratic candidate down in South Carolina. And I don't even know if there's ever been a time that this many viable candidates are even out there, let alone running at the same time, let alone with the opportunities and ability to win. And the representation we do already have in the Senate, and like the potential to grow. So it's an exciting time for.
Cameron, I was telling the other day that it's the candidate out in Georgia who has raised more money than both of the sitting Senate, the young lady who got appointed, and her candidate. This is a good year for people that look like us to be running for Senate.
Yeah. I'm proud to be a part of it, man. I think this is a moment where people realize we got to step up.
Let me ask you real quick, what's the demographics of your campaign and your volunteers? Are they young? Are they old? Or, you know?
Yeah, that's the dope part about it. It's like, it's really intersectional. It's a lot of young people that are helping to organize, a lot of student groups from our universities around the state. Right. We also have, you know, a lot of our elders have come in and said, all right, we're not super comfortable with using things online, but we're willing to learn. This is really a
teaching moment.
It's a moment for all of us to see if we're in it together. You know, I'm on shoulders, and you know, young folks are ready to step up, and we bring them all together. That's the movement.
That's it.
Yeah.
You want to take me to my signature question, Cameron?
No. That's perfect. Signature. Yes. I wanted to, closing out, because I did have one quick, very very quick question about. And you touched on this, and then we'll go into top five that are alive. Mitch McConnell, I mean, people are calling him. I mean, he's got T-shirts that he embraced the nickname Cocaine Mitch and then Moscow Mitch, which is weird to me. It's like, dude, why are we even – like, I've seen him – he's, like, selling and profiting off of that, let alone – but this guy moves like the mafia. Like, he's wanted – like, to said he's screwing Kentucky. Like, you can read so many – trusted articles and see so many things of how he's screwed the state over, how he's self-dealed, helping him and his wife and his cronies, like things that he's done, so much legislation that could help so many more people that he's blocked. He's talked about consistently, and it's funny that like everywhere else in the country, I feel like if it was a national race for Senate in Kentucky, he would get voted out. Like he probably would get voted out. Say that again.
People do not like him in Kentucky. Kentuckians do not like Mitch McConnell.
So how is he?
He calls himself the Grim Reaper too, which, you know.
My question is, can you explain how has he gotten this far? Because I think you represent in this time specifically, and this I think it's come to a boiling breaking point. So I believe in Kentucky that Kentucky is going to vote him out, and I think you will be that candidate, and it can be a candidate that can take over and be real leadership that we need. But I'm just curious, as a person not in Kentucky, how has this been happening for so long?
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, he's an institution. And so people don't like him, but they don't know what different looks like. And Kentucky's been one of the most disenfranchised states in the country, which is why my priority as a legislator, the one thing I wanted to do was push restoration of voting rights, because nearly one in four black people in Kentucky couldn't vote. Plus one out of 10 overall in Kentucky couldn't vote because of a felony conviction. And then turnout is really low because, again, so many people are struggling. They see things stay the same way. What's the point? And that's why I'm telling folks, you cannot beat Mitch McConnell by just throwing money at him and playing that same old game. We got to inspire people to believe things can be different, and they want it. And the reason I know we can do this is Matt Bevin. Like, I own Mini Trump, like I said, and it wasn't partisan. These were folks that were like, you know what? We don't like politics, but we can't stand being disrespected by this guy. And teachers organize, and they're not political people. They were just trying to take care of our children, our future. And they showed up, and we need that right now, and I think people see it. And to have a candidate that leans into that, that lives that struggle, that's speaking to young voices, speaking to people in space that have been ignored, is how we're going to get it done.
Well, thank you. We got to get it done. It used to blow my mind, like, logically, like, how is this guy still getting elected? Like, it's on TV every day. I read a million articles. He is right there. It feels like he's been bought and paid for by several other countries in interest. And, like, you can see they are drawing clear distinctions, like, here, connect this dot here. And it's like, Mitch McConnell, another 6 years. Mitch McConnell, another 6 years. So I'm really hoping for your candidacy. I'm really hoping to beat that guy. I think America will be off. I'm like, man, why don't a better Republican come in? Even if it's going to be, I mean, I'm not necessarily a Republican, but it's like, we got better ones than that. Like, but
he runs the party. Like, he's built it all within himself. That's why I say he's an institution. And so it honestly hasn't crossed a lot of folks' mind that he could actually be beat. And once you introduce that as a real thing, it's taking off, man. So, yeah, now we're going to get rid of him. We got you. And I know this is good for the whole country, too.
Exactly. Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, we end – this has been a great, like I said, great, informative, and inspirational interview. But we end – this is HipPolitics. The platform, the podcast itself, but the platform overall, HipPolitics is about mobilizing the political power of hip-hop. We believe that hip hop, now being more than 40 years old, as a genre, is now beyond just a music. It is the number one consumed music genre in the world, but it's the number one culture. It's uniquely started. It's an American born thing, but now it's global. It's cross generational. Jay-Z, just my favorite rapper, just turned 50 in December, but you got Lil Tecca, Lil Mosey, you got NLE Choppa, some of these young up and coming who are doing millions of views online and streams are 19, 20 years old. You got Dr. Dre's almost 60. Ice-T is on Law & Order SVU, he's 65. So you got a spectrum of 30, 40, 50 years of people who are multi-generational, but they all connect to that same, connect to the hip hop generation and connect to a same spirit, culture, a vocabulary, an understanding, and it's also multi-ethnic. Like, I mean, it's not just a black thing. It's Latino. It's not just a minority thing. I mean, there's tons of white people throughout, and it's not even just American. Like I said, there's some of the biggest b-boy challenges are in South Korea. You know, I mean, you've got DJs and hip hop scenes from the UK to Germany to the African rap scene is and hip hop scene is blowing up. So we say that to say that the hip political power that it lies within that many people in the hip hop community and generation is vast. It's a vast untapped thing. And there's so many things that we as hip hop care about that we need to mobilize around. So with that, but something that is also big in hip hop is arguing about your lists. Like people time in and time out, you've been in a barbershop, you've been in a text thread, you've been in a dorm room, you've been on a street corner. I mean, you've been anywhere else, somebody's arguing who's better than this, telling me about this song. And something that has stuck around is this top fives. Like for some reason, that number five is that magical number. It's not like who's your top three artists, not your top seven, maybe top 10, but it's really that top five. So we do this question because I'm curious, and I think the world be curious. Top five dead or alive. Charles Booker, candidate for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. Who are your top five dead or alive?
Yeah.
Favorite hip-hop artists of all time?
Yeah, so it's funny because like if you follow me, every once in a while I'll put a rap up. Like I actually did a remake of Jack Harlow's What's Poppin'. Like music is really important to me. It's not. Yeah, he's from Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah, he's proud of the young brother holding it down for us. But you know, that's part of our legacy. That's our story. You know, that's our platform. But so my five, it's tough, man, putting five. But Jay's definitely at the top. You know, then of course you got Tupac and Biggie, like, which is really incredible how they were both able to be storytellers in like different spaces. Which means a lot to me. Then I gotta put Kendrick Lamar in there. You know, for my, you know, my generation, the way he was able to tell the story, and I keep going back to that. And then to round it out, which was tough, it was between T.I. and Wale. And I'm gonna go with T.I. because T.I. put a couple songs out that like really changed my life. He had a song that was called Doing My Job.
Just doing my job.
And, it was like, yeah, we got lives we want to live life too. We got moms, dad, wives, kids just like you, but our options are few. It was hell in high school when you're helping with the rent, lights, and the gas bill too. Like, I felt that. And so, yeah, I carried that with me. And I actually, when I won my race to State House, I pulled up playing T.I. just out of respect. So that's a five. I put Wale on there too because he's
Wale coming super off dope. Strong six man.
Six minutes.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for joining us today. I thank you for being, like, again, joining the Hip Politics podcast. To all of our listeners, can you just a phone number, email, how do people tap into you, social media again?
Yeah. If you want to get involved, especially all my brothers, Kappa Alpha Psi out there, all the young leaders, go to booker4kentucky.com. You can hit us up at cb@booker4kentucky.com. That'll reach out to me. And follow me on all the social media platforms, booker4ky. Let's connect. Let's make this happen.
Appreciate that.
Let's make this happen.
Kentucky, booker4kentucky.com. Make sure y'all check that out. Also to our Hip Politics listeners, even though we're locked down, we still need the support. So if you'll see, we just dropped the new merch. You can find all of that at hippoliticspodcast.com. The website, hippolitics.org. What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Charles, we
got to
send you a
T-shirt. Yeah,
for sure. I got you.
Make sure you check us out at hippoliticspodcast.com. Can check out the podcast. Please sure to share with friends, family, colleagues, anybody. We're on all platforms. We just launched, we actually just switched to anchor.fm. So that's our key platform. But again, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other platforms all over the world. Just type in Hip Politics. And then also the video clips where our YouTube numbers have been going up. So appreciate all those that have been subscribing. Make sure you subscribe youtube.com/hippolitics. We got some new digital shows that are also been launching and coming out. So check all of that out. But just thank you again. We really appreciate the listening, really, encourage people to please stay socially distanced. We really are trying to get through this as a country, as a people. Is safe and saving as many lives as possible. So please take that serious. It's not a hoax. It's not a game. Your life is, everyone's life is kind of interdependent right now. So no matter how rich, how poor, all these certain communities are getting hit harder than others, like mine, specifically Black communities, but it's something that's affecting all of us. And that's because we got to take it serious. So please stay safe. We appreciate, make sure you follow Mike McQuarrie at DCNoop90 on all social. Make sure you follow me at Mr. Cameron Calvin on all socials. Again, thanks. We appreciate the support, and especially in times like this, we're going to keep giving you good content. We're almost coming up at the end of season two. Now, we're about 40 plus episodes in, so appreciate all the support. But with that, this has been another edition of the Hippolytics Podcast. And like that, we're out. Peace.
Hippolytics, baby.